Aretha passing away at the age of 76. The first guy I thought of that I wanted to talk to this morning about the impact of Aretha Franklin is on the line with us. He's Ben Fong Torres, writer, senior editor at Rolling Stone magazine. From when Rolling Stone began, he now writes for the San Francisco Chronicle, among other things. And welcome, Ben. Good to have you here.
Good morning, Pat. Hi.
We knew this was coming. And, we knew that Aretha had been in hospice care for days now, surrounded by friends and family. Still, I have a profound sadness today when we finally got the word that she had passed.
Well, yes, no matter how ready one might be, and it was kind of a blessing in a way that people knew about this for the past couple of days so that they could pay their RESPECT to her. While family might be able to let her know about the outpouring of emotion for her and gratitude for her, because she truly lived up to that title that was given to her. A lot of pop singers and idols get titles like King of Rock and Roll or whatever, but she really truly was the Queen of Soul. She helped in the 60s to define it, actually, as well as to practice it and perform it for all her years.
Yes, she sure did. And up until her final performances, that's true. And Ben, I was saying earlier this morning that one of my favorite pieces of film and audio of Aretha was one of her last performances at the Kennedy Center Honors when Carole King was being honored earlier this year. And Carole King, who wrote and performed Natural Woman, Aretha showed up to perform it that night in honor of Carole King. And to watch Carole King's reaction to Aretha performing that song, it was really an amazing thing. Somebody else is trying to get a hold of you. No surprise this morning.
Yeah, that happens when major performers pass away.
Yes.
I apologize for the
That's okay. I'm glad we got you. But anyway, I think Carole King was representative of a lot of our responses to the way that Aretha sang.
Right. She and Jerry Goffin wrote You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman specifically for her. And I think once she arrived on the scene, and that is leaving Columbia Records in the mid-60s and signing with Jerry Wexler and Atlantic Records in 1966, once the first songs came out of those sessions in Muscle Shoals, people knew that she was a true gem and wanted to come up with music for her. Although, of course, Aretha, being multi-talented, could write her own songs. And so it was a great mix of her own compositions and the songs that people bestowed on her.
And she loved gospel so much, grew up in the church. The church was a big deal to Aretha her entire life. And I just believe that that gospel nature of hers was infused to every song she did.
Yeah, that's true, because it was part of her. She grew up singing gospel. She came from a spiritual family, and she played piano. And so that was the kind of foundation of a lot of her music and her writing. And she wrote for backup singers as well, the Sweet Inspirations. That was her deal.
I didn't know that.
Uh-huh. And so, yeah, songs would have spirit in the title, like Spirit in the Dark, and songs that people read or heard as being kind of sensual and sexy would also stand for women's rights and equality and as we keep saying now, respect. So Black Pride was a theme or a sub-theme of many of her songs.
And I was amazed, Ben, to find out that Aretha was the first black woman on the cover of Time magazine.
Right. And I know that when Rolling Stone started back in late 67, John Landau, our esteemed critic and the future manager of Bruce and producer of Bruce Springsteen, wrote a number of essays about R&B, and Aretha was probably one of the first, if not the very first, subjects that he tackled expounded on to let our readers know that she was much more than a hit maker, a pop artist.
Did you have the opportunity to see her live, Ben?
saw her at Fillmore West when she shared the stage graciously with Ray Charles.
Oh, wow.
And that helped give Ray a much-deserved boost at a time when he was being ignored, not as respected as he deserved to be. And so the two of them worked together, and, of course, there's an album out of that. And so I saw her there.
Wow, that's pretty fantastic. I'm sorry to say that I have never seen her live. Thank God we have so many performances of hers to watch listen to. And the other thing that I was surprised about was not that she was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but she was the first woman to be inducted, and it took until 1987.
Oh, I think that's because one is not qualified until after 25 years of their first recording, although
okay.
In her case, yeah. So I think as soon as she was eligible, she was in. So the first tier of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame were the artists of the early to mid-50s and late-50s, and on it went. And she began recording. Well, of course, she began recording at Columbia in 1960, so she should have been in earlier.
Yeah.
But she was in there pretty early.
Okay, that makes me feel a little bit better about that part.
Thanks for that, Ben.
Also, you know, Aretha was such a generous artist. You talked about, you know, her sort of lifting up Ray Charles at that time, and also the number of duets that she did are so noteworthy and so memorable. I mean, you know, she and Annie Lennox doing "Sisters Are Doing It for Themselves," and mm-hmm. she and George Michael, you know, "Knew You Were Waiting," and just so many others, great collaborations that she took part in.
Yes. Well, you were a big fan, Pat, and so was I, and so were millions and millions of others, that's for sure. And
absolutely,
still are.
Yes.
That music goes on forever.
You know, she's the kind of singer that I wish there were a lot more of, and the kind of singer that didn't need, you know, 25 backup dancers, you know, in sync to make sure that there was a show there.
And it was a different time.
Yeah.
And we can explore further, too, because there are releases of demos and outtakes, and the Columbia catalog is of interest too, especially to true fans of hers, to hear her being assigned to tackle ballads, pop standards, and jazz songs. Jazz, of course, she could cover, but I remember as a kid in around 1960, one of the first things I heard from her was her take on "Rockabye Your Baby."
Hmm.
And that was something I had heard Jerry Lewis do around the same time, but Aretha did it upright. And but thank God that she made the move to Atlantic Records in 1966, found herself in the capable hands of Jerry Wexler, who had worked with all the great artists like Wilson Pickett and Percy Sledge and Sam and Dave, and here came Aretha to top them all.
Wow, what a lineup. What a lineup. What are you left with in terms of Aretha's legacy, Ben?
Oh, her music and the fact that she, in a way, like Elvis, pretty much did it all, you know, without the teen idol connotations, but that she was so wide-ranging in her scope, in her music, in her vocal range, her range of subjects, her range of concerns. She could and did it all, and it's a wealth of music with which we are left, and so I'm grateful for that. Whenever you want to hear Aretha, you can hear her. You can see, and now, because of technology, you can see highlight moments of her performances, whether she was honoring somebody else or was, as often was the case, being honored.
Yeah, that part is a beautiful thing, and I know that that my iPod's going to be full of Aretha by the end of the day. And Ben, thanks so much for jumping in. I know you are a wanted commodity today because of your background. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for your work.
All right, that is Ben Fong-Torres, writer and senior editor of Rolling Stone magazine for so many years, now a writer for the San Francisco Chronicle. And our thanks to Ben Fong-Torres.